com. It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 57 degrees under fairly fair skies. Out at the airport, they are showing variable winds at 3 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility, as well as 72% humidity. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, with a high near 61, calm winds turning to the east to 5. Partly cloudy overnight, with a low around 47 and west winds to 15, and mostly sunny tomorrow, high near 57, west winds 15, gusting to 25. They're calling for partly sunny skies on Thursday and mostly sunny skies on Friday as well. Coming up on the Midday Report, big gusty winds knocked out power on the Kenai Peninsula recently. The Alaska ACLU is suing the state over inmate deaths. And a new lumber grading program is hoped to help that industry.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Senate's getting back to work in Washington following a month-long recess. Averting a partial government shutdown is again top of the agenda. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell spoke on the Senate floor a short time ago.
This month, of course, Congress needs to address our nation's most pressing needs with timely appropriations, and we need to keep the lights on come October 1st.
McConnell did not address his health during his first speech on the Senate floor since he temporarily froze during a press conference in Kentucky last Wednesday, the second such episode in the last 6 weeks. A Capitol Hill physician disclosed today that McConnell underwent several medical evaluations, but there was no evidence that the 81-year-old suffered a seizure, stroke, or movement disorder. The White House says it's closely monitoring communications between Russia and North Korea. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports the Biden administration says Moscow may attempt to buy ammunition from Pyongyang to refill its reserves during its more than year-and-a-half-old war with Ukraine.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says it's still unclear how far the cooperation between Russia and North Korea will go, but it's apparent that discussions have been actively advancing.
The Russians have imbued them with an increased intensity, as reflected in the fact that their defense minister, their number one guy in their defense establishment, actually got on a plane and flew to Pyongyang to try to push this forward.
There have been reports that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un may travel to Russia for a summit with President Vladimir Putin. Some experts have said that in return for weaponry, Pyongyang would likely request food and energy shipments and transfers of sophisticated weapons technologies. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
President Biden tested negative again today for the coronavirus, but NPR's Franco Ordonez reports he'll be wearing a mask anyways while indoors and around people.
President Biden is scheduled to leave Thursday for a trip to Asia. He'll visit Vietnam and India, where he'll attend the G20 Leaders Summit. The National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, says there have been no changes to his schedule after the First Lady tested positive for the virus.
We have long experience now from the early days of the administration in managing for situations in which COVID plays a role in summits.
He noted that various leaders have needed to participate virtually in events, but the White House says President Biden is not experiencing any symptoms, and he'll test at regular intervals, as White House doctors recommend, before and during his trip. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, the White House.
Investigators have expanded the search area for a fugitive convicted of murder. Danilo Cavalcante escaped from a Philadelphia area prison last Thursday morning. He's been spotted near residential areas. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Windy weather with gusts up to 30 miles per hour continues to cause damage across the central Kenai Peninsula, leaving nearly 6,000 residents without power on Thursday. Outages began yesterday morning with Homer Electric Association linemen working into the night to restore power. The most affected communities included Kenai, Soldotna, Sterling, Nikiski, and Kasilof. HEA spokesperson Carrie Ann Baker says linemen as far as Homer have come to the area to help restore power.
Our guys are working really, really hard, and we would just appreciate everybody's patience during this time and keeping them in your minds as they work as fast as they can to get that power turned on.
The outages have been caused primarily by fallen trees. Baker attributes an increase in dead and hazardous trees to spruce bark beetles. HEA reminds its customers that if they have hazardous trees on their property, they will be removed free of charge. A hazard tree can be defined as a live or dead tree that is leaning toward a power line. The co-op is also reminding customers to never touch a downed power line. As of Friday afternoon, there were 9,050 customers without power from Nikiski to Clam Gulch. For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The deaths of two men by suicide in Alaska prisons over the past year have prompted legal advocates to sue the state on their families' behalf. The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska filed its wrongful death lawsuit on Thursday against the Department of Corrections, seeking a financial settlement as well as an independent investigation of deaths among people jailed in Alaska, which hit a record high in 2022. Megan Edge is director of the ACLU of Alaska's Prison Project.
The state has a moral and a legal obligation to provide whatever care necessary to keep the thousands of people in Department of Corrections custody safe and healthy. And it became very clear that they were failing to do so.
The families of two jailed men who died, James Ryder and Mark Cook Jr., are included as plaintiffs in separate lawsuits, with ACLU and law firm Friedman Rubin representing Ryder's family and private attorney Vance Sanders representing Cook's. Edge says in both cases, DOC staff and procedures did not address the mental health issues either man was suffering from.
They took two people in crisis who needed access to medical care and put them in solitary confinement. That is not medical care. That is torture.
A spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Corrections said on Friday that the department had not yet been served with the lawsuits and declined to comment. According to the ACLU, 18 people died in DOC custody last year, the most ever in a single year. A new lumber grading program spearheaded by Nikiski Republican Senator Jesse Bjorkman was signed into law this week. The bill allows local lumber mill owners to assess their own lumber rather than going through a third-party grader. Producers would take a class through the Department of Natural Resources and become certified in grading. Bjorkman, who just served his first term in the state Senate, hopes the bill will help with housing shortages worsened by the cost of materials. He also says it will help grow Alaska's timber sector. Here's Bjorkman talking about the bill back in April.
That's a really great opportunity and through a piece of legislation to drive value in our local economy and open up new uses for local lumber that's not currently being used because of stringent government regulation. And local use lumber allows for cutting through some of that government red tape.
The bill got support from local lumber mill operators and statewide environmental groups. It passed the Senate unanimously in late April, and it sailed to the House in May. Governor Mike Dunleavy recently signed the bill in Big Lake. The Yukon Quest Alaska has revised its 2024 race plan. The organization has decided not to run a 550-mile race like it did last February and is instead falling back to a 300-miler for its premier event. Quest Executive Director Lisa Nilsen said, "A Fairbanks to Circle and Central race has been modified in response to musher feedback to include 25 miles on the Yukon River instead of returning to Central via Birch Creek.
The rough area around Birch Creek gets pretty cold, so we eliminated that, and we wanted to make sure to get back on the Yukon River again. So the 300-mile basically starts in Fairbanks, heads over to Circle, and then the part after that is a new trail, so it goes back to Central to have the finish there, and the new trail is what touches on the Yukon River instead of Birch Creek.
The Quest will also host 200-mile and 80-mile races, both starting in Fairbanks.
And the 200-mile qualifier finishes in Central, and the 80 is to Two Rivers and back, just like last year.
The traditional 1,000-mile Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race between Fairbanks and Whitehorse has not been held since 2020. It was initially canceled due to pandemic restrictions, and then last year due to a dispute between the Canadian and Alaska side race organizers over dog rest requirements. Nilsen says the Quest has not given up on running longer races.
Our goal is to hopefully make up with Canada someday and communicate with them and coordinate with them. But right now our main focus is definitely, especially with the 2024 race coming up, is just to make sure that we're putting together an amazing race. We're building up the sport. We're encouraging young mushers to sign up.
Nilsen, who was hired last month, says she's focused on building sponsor and community support so longer races can be held in upcoming years. Quest organizers have announced a minimum 2024 300-mile race purse of $30,000, but Nilsen says she's working to increase the amount prior to the February 3rd start date. Sign-ups for the 2024 Yukon Quest races open on Saturday, September 30th, at the Yukon Quest Alaska Race Headquarters in downtown Fairbanks. Federal authorities are sending teams out to rural Alaska to help clear up potential native land allotments, land allotment claims for Vietnam-era veterans and their family members. Last year, the Department of the Interior announced that it had completed the final step to make more than 27 million acres of land now held by the Bureau of Land Management open for selection. But that's just the beginning of the process for some native families who are looking to get title to allotments, as KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello reports from Bethel.
Last year, the Department of the Interior announced that it had completed the final step to begin processing applications from eligible Alaska Native Vietnam-era veterans for native allotments to be selected from approximately 27 million acres of public lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management. All told, there are now about 29.5 million acres available. This represents the third time that federally managed land has been offered to Alaska Native Vietnam veterans who did not have the chance to meet an earlier deadline to select land allotments because they were serving during the Vietnam War.
The Bureau of Land Management is the agency in charge of this program.
Candy Grimes has been the Bureau of Land Management Native Allotment Coordinator for 20 years. This program will not last forever. She says it's set to close December 29th of 2025.
We're the ones who convey the lands and process the applications, and it does take years to have certain steps done. Legislation would have to be passed on that.
The Native Allotment Program was wiped out by the Native Claims Act in 1971, but prior to that, families had an opportunity to file for the land, amounting to 160 acres. In 1998, Congress opened land for Native veterans who missed the chance because they were serving in the military. That period closed after 18 months. Now, another opening has come. The John D. Dingell Jr. Conservation, Management, and Recreation Act, or Dingell Act for short, of 2019, allowed claims by any Alaska Native Vietnam-era veteran who served during the period of August 5, 1964, through December 31, 1971, and did not previously receive a Native allotment of federal land.
This is for Alaska Natives who served at some time during a portion of the Vietnam era. And even if the allottee, the Alaska Native, is deceased, the heirs of the allottee can choose a member of the family or someone to represent the estate of the deceased veteran and apply on behalf of the estate for the lands.
As part of an outreach program, a federal team will be at Bethel's Association of Village Council President's office from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. on September 20th to help the Alaska Native Vietnam-era veterans and their descendants. The team will consist of BIA and BLM's Native Allotment Coordinator and two land law examiners from the BLM. But regulation prevents them from actually taking the application themselves. Here's Grimes again.
And we are available for help them with selecting their lands, explaining the application and the map to them. Also, the Bureau of Indian Affairs service providers are also available for such help. We will not be able to accept their applications on that day. Per the regulations, they're required to either mail those in to our state office here in Anchorage or hand deliver them to our Anchorage office here.
The Alaska Native Vietnam-era Veterans Land Allotment Program website has tutorial videos to help folks better understand the process, how to use the map software, and how to fill out the applications as well. If you're a predetermined eligible individual, not much is required, but more work is required for many descendants.
If they are a descendant of a deceased veteran, they will need to have a court appointment to be the personal rep of the estate. If they are not a predetermined eligible individual, we will need to have a copy of their certificate of degree of Indian blood proving that they are Alaska Native and a DD-214 showing their dates of active service and their character of discharge. This is for the veterans themselves.
If the veteran was killed in action, there won't be a DD-214, but there will be a letter of service or a document from the Department of Defense that the family member can request in order to verify the veteran's dates of service and character of service. And there could be yet more impediments. It might turn out the selected land has already been selected by the state, requiring another application. This process can take up to 2 years. Grimes wants people to keep an eye on the BLM website for updates, and she says anyone who may know an Alaska Native veteran who served during that time from 1964 through 1971 to please encourage them to get in touch with BLM, because they believe there are still some eligible veterans that they have not reached. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
In documents filed last week in Anchorage, international oil company ConocoPhillips said an ongoing federal court case is likely to make or break Alaska's largest planned oil development in decades. The Alaska Beacon reports that Connor Dunn, vice president of Willow for ConocoPhillips, said that if Alaska District Court Judge Sharon Gleason cancels required federal approvals, quote, "The Willow Project is highly unlikely to proceed at all," end quote. Dunn's statement came as ConocoPhillips filed a legal reply to several environmental groups who sued the federal government earlier this year and asked Gleason to overturn existing federal approvals as inadequate. The plaintiffs include Alaska Wilderness League, Sierra Club, and Sovereign Inupiat for a Living Arctic. A similar lawsuit filed in 2020 overturned a previous federal approval and forced regulators to restart their process, and new approval was granted this spring. The federal government is opposing the environmental group's lawsuit and is backed by ConocoPhillips, the state of Alaska, the North Slope Borough, and a variety of companies and industry groups who hope to see the project developed. Willow is expected to hold as many as 600 million barrels of recoverable oil and would generate billions for the state of Alaska in the long term, but would cost the state money during its initial years.
I'm Samantha Fields with the Marketplace Minute. Goldman Sachs now puts the probability of a recession in the next year at 15%. That's lower than its July forecast, which had the odds at 20%. China's biggest property developer has avoided default for now. Country Garden made more than $22 million in interest payments on bonds just before a crucial deadline. But concerns about the company, as well as the health of China's real estate market as a whole and its economy, remain. The UN World Food Program will have to stop feeding another 2 million people in Afghanistan because it's low on money. More than 15 million people in the country need food assistance. But with these new cuts, the World Food Program will only be able to help about 1 in 5 of them. I'm Samantha Fields with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the fifth day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:18. It will set again at 8:56, giving us 13 hours and 38 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 53 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 71 degrees, set in 1929, and our record low is 36, set in 1988. It's currently 57 degrees here in Kodiak. The skies are kind of fair, a little sort of haziness out there. The wind speed's variable at 3 miles per hour at the airport and 10 miles of visibility. Mostly sunny skies are predicted for the rest of the afternoon. As tomorrow, too, partly sunny on Thursday and mostly sunny on Friday, too. High near 61 today with calm winds turning to the east to 5. Overnight low tonight of 47 with west winds to 15. And a high near 57 tomorrow with west winds 15, gusting to 25. We just had a low tide here on the east side, and one is about to turn over on the west side. A low tide happened at 12:02 p.m. here in Kodiak City. It was a 2-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:26 this afternoon and be 8.9 feet. Over on the west side, you're about to have a low tide at 12:38. Just a few minutes from now, a 3-foot tide in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a high tide at 6:51 p.m. of 13.7 feet. Well, let's see what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to say.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 42, issued 9 a.m. September 5th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, September 6th, until 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters adjustments. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Wednesday, September 6th to 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th in the following area: at Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Outer Aikuluk, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Deadman, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, northwest of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iqaluit Bay, Outer Gatoy Bay, southwest of Fognak, and northeast of Fognak sections of the Fognak District, and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest of Fognak section of the Fognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of northwest Kodiak and southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear and must be returned to the water unharmed. Cost recovery fisheries began in the Katoi Bay Special Harvest Area on September 2nd. Cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area stat charts and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
And mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tomorrow, southwest 15 increasing to 25 knots this afternoon with 5-foot seas, southwest 25 tonight with 5-foot seas, and west 25 tomorrow with seas to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow there as well with southwest 20 increasing to 30 knots this afternoon, 5-foot seas building to 8 feet this afternoon. For tonight, southwest 25 and 7-foot seas, and for tomorrow, west 25, seas to 7 feet. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a planning work session on Wednesday. That meeting will begin at 3 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting is open to the public, and public members are encouraged to web stream the meeting. The web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak's website. For those who wish to request meeting materials printed or have questions, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Elder Storytime has been rescheduled to Friday. That's happening Friday from 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. in the public library. Join Canada's Elder Services and Kamai Home Visiting Programs for Elder Storytime, 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. on Friday. Kodiak's Fairwind players are back for another round of Boo. It's Boo 2. Our Halloween Spectacular debuted last year to such acclaim that we decided to do it again with all new silly, scary short skits and a short play. There are parts for just about every age group and any level of experience. If you've ever wanted to try your hand at acting, this is your chance to show your stuff. It'll be fast, it'll be fun, and you'll have a howlingly good time. Auditions are Thursday night, September 7th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, the 10th, from noon to 2 p.m. in the Drama Pod at the Gerald C. Performances will be on the 27th and 28th of October. No need to bring anything, nothing to prepare. Just show up on Thursday or Sunday, and they'll take it from there. And they need kids from 8 to 108, mostly teen to adult. Call Pam or Mike here at KMXT at 486-3181 for more information. It's going to be beautiful. Again, that's Thursday night, 9 p.m., 6 to 9 p.m., and Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. at the Drama Pod. The Kodiak Arts Council is excited to bring back the Community Choir and Orchestra for Joy 2023, a wonderful holiday concert celebrating the magic and warmth of the season with festive music. Interested in performing? Auditions for Joy 2023 will be held Sunday, September 10th at 2 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium's main stage and band room. Audition goers must be 18, high school graduate and above to audition, and have intermediate to advanced proficiency in choir or orchestra. Audition forms are available at www.kodiakarts.org, the Kodiak Arts Council website. For information and questions that you might have, call 907-942-5840 or email kodiakartscouncil@gmail.com. Dive into the history of rock and roll at Kodiak College during the fall semester. Beginning September 11th, a 10-week history of rock and roll course will take you on a melodic ride to the evolution of rock and roll. Registration is open for Humanities 212 History of Rock and Roll at Kodiak College for this sonic journey through the pages of history. The following are the upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Tuesday, September 5th, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having their regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Station at 5:30 p.m. On Wednesday, September 6th, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 11 a.m. On Thursday, September 7th, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. The Declaration of Write-In Candidacy filing period for the October 3, 2023 municipal election is now open until 3 p.m. on Tuesday, September 26, 2023. The Declaration of Write-In Candidacy packets are available in the Borough Clerk's Office and on the Borough website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.